Good morning, and you're tuned in to 88.5 KRFY, and this is the morning show with myself, Susie Prez, and my co-host over there, smiling away.
Chris Bessler. Good morning, Susie. How are you doing?
Chris Bessler. After all these years, I still know who you are. I'm doing fine on this slightly warmer morning than yesterday, and it is Wednesday, November 13th, and we have a great show lined up today, don't we, Chris?
We do.
Yeah.
We are talking with a couple of folks from Reclaim Idaho. We have with us Rebecca Schroeder. She's the executive director. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
You drove all the way up from Coeur d'Alene, so thank you very much. How were the roads, Rebecca?
Not too bad this morning, actually. Oh, feeling pretty lucky. Yes.
Yeah, I think we all are. We're really, really glad you could make it up. And you're the executive director of Reclaim Idaho. We have a lot to talk about with that.
Yes, yes.
But we'll get to that in just a moment.
Okay.
And we have the weather from the National Weather Service, since the weather is the issue the last few days here. And currently 32 degrees is what the National Weather Service is saying. We have patchy fog and 43, a high today, low tonight, 30 with more patchy fog. And even yet tomorrow, for high of 46 and patchy fog. So the sun may or may not come through, but we'll see what happens. I think on Friday, there's a 90% chance of rain with a high of 44. And you can always go and find out more later.
Yeah, kind of the big surprise was all the snow we got yesterday. We still have a couple inches kind of hanging out around town, and up on the mountain they got a bit more than that. And we have a Sandpoint City Minute. This is provided to us by City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. And the city will be hosting two community visioning events this Thursday, that's tomorrow, November 14th, in order to inform its update of the Sandpoint Comprehensive Plan that it's working on right now. First event is 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Sandpoint Airport. This is a drop-in event. You can come by any time between 10 and 4. There will be city staff and consultants from Logan Simpson, their consulting firm, to provide information about the Sandpoint Airport, its importance to our community, and the vision for its future. The public will have opportunity to discuss ways to ensure the airport's long-term vision is achieved in a way that's going to be compatible with our broader community vision that's going to be expressed in the comprehensive plan. Then later that evening, from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m., the city is partnering with Forest Bird Charter School to hold a second broader discussion to identify and refine our community's shared values and themes that will influence the future of Sandpoint. Of course, everyone's invited to that as well. That's, again, 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Forest M. Bird Charter School. There'll be snacks and refreshments, and there will also be activities for children. You can get more information on both of these events on the city website, sandpointidaho.gov.
And that's the Sandpoint City Minute. I also want folks to know that later on this afternoon at 4 o'clock, I'll be interviewing live in the studio singer-songwriter Isabel Stillman. She'll have her guitar in hand, and she'll be playing a few tunes to preview her evening concert at DeLuna's. It's a songwriter's concert. Not conference, concert at DeLuna's, and she'll be with Ben Olson and Josh Hedlund, and it's a free concert, so that's this evening at DeLuna's, but at 4 o'clock, she'll be live here in the studio. That's Isabel Stillman. She can join me. And with that, I think we should get to Rebecca Schroeder. Let's start with just a little bit of background of Reclaim Idaho. You're the executive director, and you've been that for about a year, I think, or a little bit more.
I actually jumped right into it as executive director during the legislative session. It was March 15th was my first day, but it's been an intense and busy several months since then.
Well, I know that Reclaim Idaho has been doing a lot of work. It's constant. It's ongoing. But let's just get a little bit of the background of how it started and why it started, and then we'll get to the current campaign, and then we'll hear about what's been going on.
Sounds good, Susie. If we take it way back, all the way to the beginning, we're right here in Sandpoint again, where co-founders Luke Mayville, Garrett, and Emily Strizich got together to knock on doors and employ this grassroots action to try to pass a school levy here in Sandpoint in 2016. So after seeing that success, because you all know how important passing school levies is here, right? Thankfully, we can celebrate the permanent levy passing. But seeing that success, you know, they really decided to look at what policy issue could they take on and employ that same grassroots model on a statewide level. Medicaid expansion was obviously the policy issue of choice. You know, the initiative process was really designed to take on a crisis that the legislature won't address. Medicaid expansion was it. So the Green Camper came into being. And, you know, I first met Luke in a park in Coeur d'Alene. He was standing on a milk crate, you know, talking about Medicaid expansion. And I've worked as a healthcare advocate for more than a decade. My son has cystic fibrosis. I've worked both nationally and on state Medicaid issues. And so he was really speaking to me. And that's the beginning of, you know, the journey to expand Medicaid in Idaho with the ballot initiative, which, of course, we were successful with that effort. And you know, that's how this all got started.
Reclaim Idaho is truly a grassroots organization. And as you say, it's came about from seeing a school levy needing to get attention and pass. They did door knocking. They saw how successful that was. But then they, as you said, in 2017, came together with, I think there were three things that Reclaim Idaho decided were nonpartisan and important for Idaho. Can you just briefly go into...
That's right.
Before they took up the Medicaid expansion petition
yes.
drive.
Yes. So we want to work on consensus issues that bring folks together. And we feel like healthcare for families, you know, healthcare for everyone, protection of public lands and quality public education are issues that every Idahoan can get behind and places where we can really make significant progress.
And I just want to say, I say this every time we talk with Reclaim Idaho. I think that Reclaim Idaho actually started right here in the studios of KRFY.
Oh, yeah.
Because before the big Panada event with Mary, was it the author, the Pulitzer Prize winning author, that was part of the kickoff event for the school levy.
Mm-hmm.
They came here that morning and said, we're going to do this thing. So that's my claim, our claim to fame.
I love it.
So I thought I'd throw out a mention that this is actually streaming live right now on the Reclaim Idaho Facebook page. If you want to get a visual as well as the audio you're getting here at KRFY. And Alicia Abbott, our local Reclaim Idaho person, is behind the camera with that. So check that out on Facebook. And by the way, if you want to swing back and see it later, it will be recorded there. So you'll be able to catch it that way as well. So there's some Reclaim Idaho has accomplished a heck of a lot in a short amount of time, Rebecca. And we're going to want to talk about the Medicaid expansion. We're going to want to talk about the impact that it's actually had at the state level and the whole initiative process, because some big things came out last year where they're trying to restrict some legislators are trying to restrict the initiative process. But right now you have a big initiative underway. It's for education in the state. Why don't you tell us about that?
Right. So the new ballot initiative is called Invest in Idaho, and that's exactly what we mean. We want to put in front of voters in November 2020, $200 million annually in investments in Idaho K-12 public education. This money would go toward the most urgent needs in our public schools, things like teacher salaries, textbooks, career technical training, full-day kindergarten. That really, you know, 8 miles from where I grew up after failure to pass a levy in Kamiai, the middle school just closed. So we're talking about sending a lifeline out to our K-12 public schools. And, you know, every public opinion poll, every study says we need to make these investments in our public education. And we want to put that question in front of voters. So hit me with that next question, Chris.
Okay, so what specifically is the question that would be on the ballot if the initiative passes?
Right, so we would generate this money, the $200 million annually, through two measures. The first would be a marginal tax on our highest income individuals in Idaho. So let me roll back a little bit. 95% of Idahoans will see absolutely no change in their tax bill with this measure. Okay? So let's start from that place. 95% of Idahoans will see no change. If you are lucky enough as an individual to make more than $250,000 annually, then you will see a marginal tax on earned income over that $250,000 for an individual, over $500,000 for a family. And it is extremely modest what we're talking about here. So if you are a family making $530,000 annually, you're talking about a little more than a $300 tax bill increase here. So nobody's going to the poorhouse with this measure. It's extremely modest. The other part of the revenue comes from restoring the corporate tax rate to where it was between the years 1987 and 2000, taking it from 6.925 currently back to 8%, where Idaho business thrived for more than a decade. Okay, this is a little more than a penny on the dollar increase. So that is how we're going to generate that money that will be distributed equally per student, no matter where you live around the state. It comes out to be about $600 per student, no matter where you live.
So in our school district, do you know what that works out to? If we had
we got to get the calculator out
yeah,
here, Chris.
Okay. I'm guessing we have maybe 5,000 students in the district. I'm sorry, I don't know that number.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm gonna crunch those numbers right now. But in Salmon, when we were visiting there, they only have about 750 kids in their district. Let's see, times 600. This is three. Count those zeros. That's 3 million extra dollars then here that would be coming in.
That would be coming in from a state source.
Yes,
outside of the typical. Well, as we just passed with the levy, that's really bears that burden is borne all by the property owners.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
So one of the things that I keep going back to is that we have a constitutional obligation here in the state of Idaho to, I guess they use the word uniform,
mm-hmm.
Thorough K-12 public education. So what does this initiative do?
Right. So as I traveled around the state talking to folks, we saw without a doubt that uniform part is not there right now. You know, there are vast differences between school in Kuski, Idaho, where I grew up, versus school in Ada County versus school in Ketchum, right? It very much depends on how property rich this district is, because we are generating an unfair, you know, portion of just maintenance and operations dollars from this flurry of levies that happens every couple of years. And so if you live in a property rich area, then you can get a lot more money, you know, for those schools, and schools there look a lot different. So this initiative would begin to move that responsibility of funding our schools back to the state where it belongs, because right now it has been, you know, spread out to the property owners of our state that are, shouldering an unfair burden.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that's a complaint we hear about these levies.
Ooh, is property taxes,
yeah,
right?
It's all added onto property taxes. And since the funding formula for the state changed up in 2006, due to some legislation down there, I think the intent at that time was to put more of the burden onto the sales tax, because they increased the sales tax by a penny. At the same time, they reduced taxes that property owners were paying into the thing, into education. We've seen a flurry, more than a flurry, 92 out of 115 school districts mm-hmm. around the state are depending on override, these kind of supplemental levies to fund their schools.
Right.
So it switched up the funding formula back in 2006 in ways that are really starting to play out now.
Yes. Yeah. That was Risch, Governor for a Day action that helped precipitate that change. But you're absolutely right. You know, that has been, it, when let's just talk about the definition of supplemental, right? When you fail to pass a supplemental levy and a school closes, that defies the definition of supplemental, right? Mm-hmm. We are not fairly funding our schools mm-hmm. for basic maintenance and operation, period.
So what you're saying is this initiative, this idea of a permanent fund that is equally distributed per student through the state is an equalization of that situation.
That's right.
And with 88,000 new people moving into Idaho last year, that's just a number I saw somewhere. It could be more. Having this come from income tax over, you know, for the very, very wealthy and corporate tax back to its original level in 2000, that is a true equalization. It makes sense. Is that why it was kind of written up this way?
Right. Yeah. We really want to level the playing field a little bit here. We had in 2017 money in our pockets as a state that could have gone toward things like K-12 public education, but our legislature prioritized a tax cut for basically who? The wealthiest individuals in our state and folks who file their taxes as a C corporation, these massive corporations. So we feel like this is leveling the playing field. And like I said, really throwing a lifeline to some of those districts that are desperate to see. You know, some districts rely more than 50% of their budget on these levies. So it's just every couple of years, you know, every couple of years, it's a nail biter. It would be a disaster for, you know, a small community or any community to lose a school, right? That we are a predominantly rural state. And when those schools go away, our communities die. You know, this is vital to the health of our state.
Well, once again, we're very fortunate that Bonner County passed a permanent levy.
Yes.
Which really, I was thinking about employees, parents, children. Everyone's affected by, every 2 years, we are affected by the potential of that not happening.
Right.
Luckily, for 20 years, it did pass, but it was a lot of work. So now people can really focus on the task at hand, education.
Yes. Well, and the cost that it takes to run a, you know, say yes campaign, that again, that energy and time could just be focused on something different, you know, other than trying to keep your school alive.
Right. I wanted to just get back for a moment to some of the things that this, if this was to pass mm-hmm. in the 2020 ballot, if it gets on the ballot, and then we'll get to how it gets there. But if it was to pass, some of the things that it would fund, I think the question also becomes, what doesn't it fund?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I have heard from listening to other people talk about it that it doesn't fund administrative costs.
That's right. The money's in the initiative. We write that it cannot be used for administration. It can be used. The State Board of Education is the overseeing body that works with local districts because we respect local districts to know and understand their most urgent needs, which differ, you know, but depending on where you are around the state. But the monies can be used within the realm of reducing class sizes and preventing class size increases, competitive teacher salaries and support staff, career technical education, full day kindergarten, supplies for students like textbooks, special education, things like music, drama, band, you know. So again, in Coeur d'Alene, we may prioritize teacher salary. You know, we're 20 minutes from the Washington border and really struggling to hold on to teachers. Other places around the state may prioritize that full day kindergarten, right? So there will be some variability there in how the money is used. And we have been asked also, you know, bonds and levies are two different things, right? The bond dollars are what fund buildings, and this money is not for building costs. And we do hope that, you know, for things like reducing class sizes, you got to hire a new teacher. Hopefully, you know, we have the space to accommodate that teacher. And we understand that, you know, this measure will not solve every single issue that we see in Idaho public education, right? I mean, we would want maybe $1 billion annually to build pre-K in Idaho, you know, invest in higher ed as well, address these issues that we're talking about here. But what this is a massive step in the right direction that will generate 100,000 conversations with voters about Idaho public education over the next year and prioritize that issue as the issue on the November 2020 ballot. So we're really excited about that part.
So one of the figures we see frequently cited, and in fact, the most recent figures show that our state funding per pupil is actually 49th out of the 50 states. I think Utah is lower than us.
Mm-hmm.
So if this measure is going to provide another $600 per student, how does that lift us up that ladder?
It does, but it must. Don't know how much, Chris. I mean, it may take us from 49th to 48th. But like I said, I think that building a citizen movement around public education in Idaho and forcing the legislature to, you know, everyone that's elected to office will have to take a position on this issue and how we're funding K through 12. Everyone running for office will also. So this is the start. We would love to see a bigger step, but we are a volunteer organization. You know, we are all volunteers aside from three people. So we needed to pick an issue that we could, like Medicaid, you know, see a massive step in the right direction, achieve a massive policy victory. So that was important as well.
And it's not even necessarily a partisan issue.
No, it's not.
Folks on all sides of the political spectrum.
Not necessarily, not at all. You know, these are our kids here in Idaho, and our state dollars, and our schools, and our teachers. And I mean, this is every bit the consensus issue that Medicaid was. I'm deeply convinced.
Just listening to this and thinking about a school district receiving an extra $3 million. That's like the stuff that does make a difference.
That's right.
Because a lot of it is utilitarian needs for the what their budget and stuff. But this are those things that can make a difference. And as the population of Idaho increases, that 170 to 200 million could increase also.
That's right. Yeah, that's not a fixed amount. That's what we anticipate based on, you know, numbers that we have currently. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about how this process works. Okay.
Okay.
You were just a couple of weeks ago, the Secretary of State, I think, certified the language of the initiative.
It has only been a couple of weeks. Yeah. It feels a lot longer than that because we've been talking about this for so long and organizing around this effort. But yes, it's only been, it's a few weeks old now, but we launched in a big way and really hit the ground running. You know, we've already collected, I think, over 5,000 signatures around the state now, and a big portion of those came from our day of action on November 5th, where we organized volunteers all around the state to, you know, this is about talking to registered voters, right? Registered voters go to the polls on municipal election day, so we took the opportunity to engage with voters as they went to vote, and it was extremely, you know, successful. And I think more impressive even than the number of signatures we were able to gather is the distribution of folks around the state that gathered signatures. I mean, I thought I knew everyone in Kuski, Idaho. I really did. My folks still live there, but there was someone that I don't even know outside the polls in Kuski collecting signatures for this initiative. So it was really incredible to see. And now we have the army of folks that we had with Medicaid expansion, plus new folks that have come to this issue, retired teachers, parents, you know, folks that care about their community and are moved by education that have joined us as well. So each one is teaching one. And we're just going for it. You know, now people have, some women carry a purse, I carry a clipboard. And a lot of folks are carrying their clipboards around, trying
and
to.
And your clipboard says.
My clipboard says, sign here to support Idaho education, invest in Idaho. Yeah. So, and that's what we mean.
Yeah. So you're out collecting signatures, and the threshold you have to hit is 55,000.
55,017 signatures by April 30th is the last day that we can turn them into the county clerks.
Okay. And it's not only that, they have to be spread out in a certain way across the state.
That's right. It can't just all be from Boise. It has to be 6%. That's 6% of registered voters. And 6% of registered voters in 18 districts.
In at least 18 different districts.
That's yeah. right.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way the legislature wants to see that it's not just a certain population center that's providing all these signatures.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yes, they want to make sure that, you know, places like rural Idaho are part of these decisions. Uh-huh. But again, just a reminder, this is just to put this measure on the ballot. This is nobody's vote if you sign it. This is just saying, we think that Idaho voters ought to have a say on this issue.
And I think that's a big point to make mm-hmm. because it is unique when the citizens can vote on something as important as education.
Right.
Oftentimes people say, I don't really have a vote. Well, this is an opportunity. It's a citizens' initiative.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. You're listening to The Morning Show. We're here in the studios with the executive director of Reclaim Idaho, Rebecca Schroeder, and we're talking about well, all the work that Reclaim Idaho is doing, has been doing since 2016, and the current work that's on the table is to get the signatures. It's a ballot initiative, petition drive, campaign to get those signatures. And we're talking about the threshold that has to be reached by April 30th. What is that for Bonner County if we're one of the counties that's of the 18 that will get 6%.
Right. So it would be broken down per district, which there are several. This is for the whole county. So I'm district one is 1,780. Okay. So each district is about that. My district four in Coeur d'Alene is 1,664. So, you know, the districts are based on population, so it should be roughly,
roughly
you know,
similar.
Exactly.
Each district.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's per district. Mm-hmm. And to get that 1780 for District 1, is there an ideal amount of signatures to gather? So that because they need to be certified.
Right. Okay, so that was another reason why we jumped on Municipal Election Day, because a lot of those signatures get kicked out because it's not a registered voter, they signed their name funky. We have to we have to get a lot more signatures than we actually need to make sure that we get the number certified that we need. So Election Day was a great way to make sure that we had registered voters, you know, and high traffic. So that's why that was so important. We hope that our validity rate is a lot higher with this first batch coming in. But we certify them as we go. So we will keep you all on track knowing, you know, okay, we've certified this many. We have this far to go.
By certified, you mean you guys check out to make sure that the signature really is a registered voter.
Yes, yeah. And then we receive them back from the county clerks as well. So once they get kind of through the process, we have a database that we're tracking all of those signatures as they come in. And we have so far 12% of the needed signatures here in District 1.
Mm-hmm. So just the mechanics of it, or can we expect to see folks at, I don't know, supermarkets or public gatherings with
clipboards? You bet. You bet. You know, we're heading into a season where it can be tough to get out. It's dark, right? I mean, it's tough to get out. But you will see folks with clipboards like mine at events and around town and doing some door knocking. You know, we love to get out and hit the doors and have those face-to-face conversations. That's time-consuming, but not only do you get a signer, you get a yes vote that way.
Mm-hmm. Do you get folks that are like, no, I'm never going to sign that?
Yeah,
Do the signature takers encounter any hostility from people that don't think it's a good idea?
Well, sure. I mean, my husband got called a commie yesterday, but you know, that's rare, and that's the very worst thing that can happen. And we, like, you know, just laughed it off. And it's kind of silly.
I think the good news is, again, this is a universal campaign to help the children.
Right.
Children are not political. They're
yes.
here. They need education.
That's right. And there are folks that are even elected to office that don't believe we should be spending a penny on a public education for our kids, even though that is, as you mentioned, Susie, our constitutional obligation to do that. And how do you convince those folks? You don't. You know, our goal is to reach out to the folks that believe that schools are the centerpiece of a healthy community, that believe in valuing our teachers, that believe in giving kids opportunities no matter where they live. We're going to get them to sign, and then we're going to get them to vote. And the same way that we did it with Medicaid, then we'll win.
Currently, what is the kind of the mood coming out of the governor's office about this new initiative? Is are they showing the favoritism towards it, or are they just staying neutral? Do we have any knowledge of that?
I will be camping out at the governor's office again once the legislature starts. I don't know what the mood is from the governor on our initiative, but the governor has been getting some press lately about, you know, he has come out with his budget priorities. The K-12 task force recently completed their work and made their recommendations. And, you know, that was on the front page of our newspaper. And I've been getting a lot of questions, actually, about, is our initiative at odds in any way with the governor's agenda, for example, or with, the K-12 task force? And what no is the short answer to that. No, we're not at odds with it. You know, I would love nothing more than to go down to the session this time and see the legislature implement all those recommendations and fund them, right? But unfortunately, we are going down there with the same group of folks that were there last time that did not budge on education. You know, they had a chance to vote on a new funding formula that they had worked on for 3 years. And the day that they were to vote in that committee, half of the committee members got up and walked out so they wouldn't have a quorum and couldn't even vote. They had a bill for preschool that couldn't even get printed last year. So I will be down there supporting and testifying in favor of any positive movement toward, you know, supporting public education that comes out of the legislature. But it is vital to remember that it is the legislature, not the governor, that implements and funds all of these things or not. And the thing that gives me pause is that the recommendations that we saw to the task force, things like funding veteran teacher salary, funding full-day kindergarten, a lot of those recommendations mirror the recommendations we saw in 2013. That are on a shelf somewhere in the Capitol collecting dust because nothing has happened, right? So, and we also had a Governor Otter who commissioned 3 work groups to study the impact of Medicaid expansion. They all said, do it. He wasn't against it. But again, the legislature wouldn't move. So we'll see what happens.
So in a way, this initiative is an answer to the lack of movement in
That's
the legislature.
It.
It's saying if you're not going to do the work you're, you know, voted in to do, the citizens may speak.
That's exactly what the initiative process was designed for. And the qualifications are rigorous. I mean, this is not the easy way to make laws, Susie. This is not the easy way to do it. And it really only works when the crisis is big enough that it moves people, ordinary people, to do extraordinary things, like knock on doors in February for their schools, right? And this will move people to do it.
Well, that's probably a good segue into another area we'd like to explore today, and that is last year, after the Medicaid initiative passed, the legislature, there was a lot of movement in the legislature by certain legislators, and in fact, our own Representative Sage Dixon was helping lead a movement to make the initiative process more difficult. Do you anticipate that's going to continue again? It didn't go anywhere. The governor didn't sign it. But is that going to come up again this session, do you anticipate?
You bet it is, Chris. You better believe it. Not only have we heard that from House and Senate majority leaders, more importantly, we've heard it from the lobbyists that have said openly, you know, we intend to push these restrictions again. And those measures passed in both the House and the Senate. And you're right, the governor vetoed it. I think on the advice of counsel that it wasn't going to hold up in the courts. But we fully anticipate fighting that battle again next session.
Mm-hmm. There's some lobbyists that are supporting the attempt to make the initiative process more restrictive.
That's right.
What's their motivation?
I think that there's a lot of fear that the initiative process could be used to put other ideas in front of people that the legislature is ideologically opposed to. I think that that is the motivation. And for certain groups like the Money Tree, for example, in Colorado, citizens with an initiative passed a limit on how much interest those predatory lenders can charge. And so then, you know, they lost a whole lot of money, and they basically had to pick up, you know, and move out of Colorado to places where they could make more money. So if there's money to be made by stifling the voice of the people, that is a reason, mm-hmm. right? I've heard that the ag industry doesn't want to see animal rights bill come forward with an initiative. Maybe that is a reason. Some folks are afraid of things like legalization. We heard lots of whispers about that in the Capitol. So I don't know precisely why anyone would be afraid of letting the people have a say on an issue, because I trust Idaho voters to uphold Idaho values.
Mm-hmm. And as you already pointed out, it's the current process we have is already pretty steep bar to pass.
It is tough. I mean, when we were even talking about this with folks, there would be a lot of, like, you know, deep sighs. I think there's a lot of fatigue. We really felt like it was a miracle when we qualified this for the ballot. It was that hard. And we're not exaggerating. But once we got going again with this new initiative, it was like everyone that had been involved before and was worried kind of, like, relapsed, you know? I mean, we just, like, dove right back in. And the feelings that you get from actually talking to people and, like, getting some ink on your petitions, everyone now is just hooked. And they're, they're carrying their petitions around just like me. And it feels so good to work on some. If we all focus on one positive thing, we can make a massive impact. And it feels so good to have something local, something positive, something that most folks care about to just focus your energy on and go for it. It's therapeutic, Chris.
You're offering therapy. Eh?
I know that Idaho citizens are often, you know, proud to be independent. Mm-hmm. And Reclaim Idaho actually gives that independence to the citizens to be able to vote on something as essential as public lands, protecting public lands, Medicaid for all, our citizens having health insurance, which has reciprocal effects in a positive way into the state with jobs and healthy people and things like that. And now the education is on the ballot, or at least the petition drive is on the table.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Reclaim Idaho isn't the only group that uses the initiative process. There have been an awful lot of proposals that have come up. This is the way citizens can say, hey, our legislature isn't addressing something. We're going to pull together and we're going to get it on the ballot and let the people decide. So the initiative process is a very important part of the whole scheme of governing.
It is. It's been one of our constitutional rights for more than 100 years. And I think that that's an important point that people don't realize is that every year there are several ballot initiatives that file with the Secretary of State. And it's rare that one qualifies for the ballot, right? So
because the bar is already that high, raising,
yes,
you know, the 55,000 signatures that are needed in 18 different counties getting 6%. Those are, the big hurdles to get over in order to get something on the ballot.
Absolutely. And again, the only reason that Reclaim Idaho was successful is because we built a citizen movement. You know, it was the people of Idaho that did that. Reclaim Idaho is made up of volunteers. Mm-hmm. So I think that the people of Idaho should be exceedingly proud for Medicaid expansion and what we're about to do with education.
And speaking of volunteers, if there's someone out there listening right now and locally want to get involved, what is happening here locally, as far as you know, Rebecca, to get these signatures?
Right. So now we're kind of in the meat and potatoes of the signature gathering campaign, which means we have local teams all around the state and local point people who are directing the signature gathering activities at events, the canvassing events that we're setting up, tracking the petitions that come in and entering data about that. So if you go to our website, reclaimidaho.org, and join our campaign, you can also contact us there. You can get plugged right into the number of local activities that are taking place all around the state to ensure that we're going to get there.
Well, the big success that you've had at Reclaim Idaho, very young group actually, it was the Medicaid expansion ballot measure that you got onto the ballot and was approved by people in 2018. So tell us about, how is that going? Is the implementation of that being carried out faithfully, do you think?
How is it going? It's going, this is what it was all about. On November 1st, enrollment began, and I'm actually, I'm so thrilled that the Department of Health and Welfare in Idaho has been very proactive in trying to identify folks who are eligible, kind of pre-qualify a number of folks. Within the first week of open enrollment for Medicaid expansion, there were something like 35,000 people already signed up. The Department of Health and Welfare has identified about 71,000, but it could be as high as 90,000, or we will see. But this is what it's all about. And despite the efforts that we saw by the legislature in the last session to repeal, restrict, gut the will of the people on Medicaid expansion, it's rolling out January 1, 2020, exactly the way that 61% of Idahoans approved it.
Well, there you go. So ballot measures can work.
Ballot measures can work. Uh-huh. And what this means for families is that we have tens of thousands of people who are going to see a doctor, maybe for the first time in their adult lives, right?
Yeah, and these were people that were falling in the so-called gap.
That's right. The Medicaid gap is those folks earning too much for traditional Medicaid, not enough to get the subsidy on the exchange. Mm-hmm.
So if someone is listening and they fall into that gap and they haven't heard about this until now, which would be a miracle, how can they get enrolled?
That's a great question. So you can, again, go to our website, reclaimidaho.org, and go to our Medicaid expansion tab. But the State of Idaho link is medicaidexpansion.idaho.gov. This is where you can get information about enrollment, right? There's also a phone number, 1-877-456-1233, for any questions about enrollment on Medicaid expansion. So this is, very important to get the word out right now, because folks that have been falling into that gap for years now have an answer.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I noticed, and I'm just backtracking here a little bit, about the folks that go out and get the signatures.
Uh-huh.
Oftentimes, probably most of the time, they have good insurance. Mm-hmm. They're not doing this for themselves. They're doing this for the common good. Now, those that are getting signatures for this education initiative, this fund that will change education in Idaho, they may have children that went to schools. They might be older and don't have children in schools. Mm-hmm. So it's really a commendable, I'm just saying that personally.
And I can confirm that personally, because it is my pleasure, being a part of this organization, to get to meet with and get to know the volunteers that are making this happen all across the state. I mean, it's so inspiring to see people. We have a lot of retired teachers who are doing this because they believe in education, and they believe in valuing teachers. And we have folks who, like you said, don't have kids in school, but see the value of, there's no more solid investment you can make than public education. Right. I mean, even if you don't have kids, these are folks that will be taking care of you in some way and productive members of our society. Right. So I'm so proud of the volunteers that make up this organization. It is my pleasure to work with such motivated, determined people who are willing to fight for our schools and teachers and students in Idaho.
So I want to squeeze in one more question on the Medicaid expansion, since that's underway right now. And the way it works is most of that is being paid for by federal funding provided under the Affordable Care Act.
90%.
90%. But that still leaves a 10%. And the number I've seen is about $60 million that the state is going to have to put in to ensuring that these folks that have been falling in the gap do have health care. That's where I've seen pushback on it.
Right.
How is the state going to fund that?
Right. So what the state should do is follow the governor's recommendation to fund our 10% match with, it would be interest on a tobacco endowment called the Millennium Fund. Interest on that. We wouldn't even have to dip into the fund. And what we're going to see as Medicaid rolls out is that we will have savings in other parts of our budget. You know, we are paying for this right now. We are paying for health care for these folks that are in the gap with county indigent care funds and catastrophic health care funds at the state level, right? Paying for emergency room care is the most expensive, inefficient way to provide care. Making those investments on the front end, if we can say preventative managed care is both cheaper and better for patients than what we're doing now, then we can begin to see how this is actually going to be a cost-saving measure for the state. We have more than 30 other states that have expanded Medicaid to look at their data and see that. This will be a lifeline for rural hospitals. We had 20 rural hospitals in Idaho on the verge of closing their doors on compensated care. Now they can stay open. You know, the impact of this for Idaho will be bringing more than $400 million annually of those federal dollars directly into our hospitals, paying our nurses and doctors, right into the health of our communities.
And will we be able to actually track that? Are there statistics kept? So in Bonner County, our county does have to, has an indigent fund, and it does have to kick in money for folks that are very ill. They don't have health insurance. They go to the emergency room where they cannot be denied care. And the county ends up having to pick up at least part of that tab. Will we be able to see a correlation between the savings from at the county level that is brought about by this?
I think that very quickly we will. You know, I think that as we are first enrolling folks, we're going to have a little bit of a bump, right, of getting everybody into the system, and we may have kind of an influx of a lot of people seeking care for that first time. These are what I call champagne problems, right? This is what we want to have. More people seeking preventative health care, fantastic. As things smooth out over, you know, the year of having this massive policy in play, I think that we will absolutely begin to see those savings from making those investments on the front end of health care.
Amazing. Sounds great. And we're here in the studio talking with Rebecca Schroeder. She's executive director of Reclaim Idaho, a grassroots organization that is looking at public lands, education, and healthcare for all. And thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. Any last bit you'd like to say?
I would just love for folks who are interested in what we're doing or want to read more about the initiative itself, have questions about Medicaid. You know, we have a wonderful website with lots of information. You can join our campaign, get on our newsletter so you don't miss out on any of the activities that we have going on. And I'd encourage you to print out the petition. Put some ink on that thing, you know. Talk to your friends and neighbors and family about our Idaho public schools and the crisis that we're facing and what we would like to see, you know, on the November 2020 ballot. It's called the 12 Signature Challenge. You can print it off with all the directions. All the cool kids are doing it.
Maybe even some uncool kids. Who knows? And you can get that at reclaimidaho.org.
That's right.
Well, thank you again, Rebecca Schroeder, for coming in.
Thank you.
And hope to see you again soon.
All right.
And this is 88.5 KRFY. You're listening to The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. And we have time for a very short song, and we'll be back with some announcements. So stay with us. This is Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World. We'll be right back with more of The Morning Show. Stay with us. And that was Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World, and he is so right. And this is The Morning Show. I'm Susie Prez with Chris Bessler, and what do we have going on? I just want to remind people before we get to that, I will be live in the studio today at 4 p.m. with singer-songwriter Isabel Stillman. She'll have her guitar. She'll be giving us a preview of her concert this evening at DeLuna's. It's a free concert, too, so tune in at 4 if you want to hear some live music. And what do you have over there, Chris?
Yeah, well, let's mention that. There's a free concert tonight at DeLuna's. There's three different musical groups playing there. And just show up and enjoy some really fine music by some of our local musicians. Other things going on around town. The annual Christmas Fair is happening at the Bonner County Fairgrounds on Saturday and Sunday. All day long, both days. It's 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday and 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday. It's a great place to find unique handmade items for that make perfect gifts for people. It also supports our local artisan groups.
So also on Thursday, tomorrow, actually on The Morning Show, Jack Peterson and Jim Healy will be talking with Beth Weber about the Festival at Sandpoint's Chamber Concert Series. And again, that's at 8 o'clock. The Morning Show is every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning at 8 a.m. It's an hour-long show of local content, and we are always live. So there you go.
There's one we should probably mention here is that on Saturday, Jeff Nizzoli is going to get roasted. Now, Jeff's the proprietor of iCarts here in town. He helps out in so many different organizations supporting them. You'll see iCarts faithfully at practically every event at the Panada or out and around town. And a portion of those proceeds typically are going to support these different organizations that they're at with their libations. And he supports tons of stuff. They're giving him a roast at the Panada. The Angels Over Sandpoint is hosting this. It starts at 8 p.m. at the Panda Theater. And he's a guy worth roasting, I'd say.
He's a great guy, and you're right. He gives so much to this community, and he is the owner of iCarts Pub, which is kind of a unique place to go. So that should be a fun thing at the Panada this Saturday.
Yeah, and you can get tickets in advance at panada.org, at iCarts, and at Eve's Leaves, and the money's going to a good cause. I'm not sure. I think it's maybe supporting the Panada itself. So.
Sounds good.
Great thing to take part in. That's on Saturday.
Anything else that's going on in our wonderful community?
Oh, there's a ton of stuff, of course, just to run. Oh, there's Comedy for a Cause that's being presented by the Bonner Community Food Bank and the Panda Theater. That's on Friday. It's has headliner Richie Minervini. He's a national touring comedian, and he's a former owner of Long Island's East Side Comedy Club. Opening is Sam Cornette, and that is at 7:30 p.m. at the Panada. And again, this is an event that's going to support the Bonner Community Food Bank and the Panada Theater. So another great thing to come. A couple places to go get some laughs at the Jeff Nizzoli Roast on Saturday and the Comedy for a Cause on Friday.
And both of those events are for fundraisers for nonprofits, Angels Over Sandpoint, and the Food Bank and the Panada. So good things to do this weekend. We want to thank our listeners for tuning in today to The Morning Show. Our guest today was Rebecca Schroeder from Reclaim Idaho. Want to thank her and all the work that Reclaim Idaho is doing for our state. And if you want to hear the podcast, it will be up on our website at krfy.org in just a moment. But are you ready to go?
Chris, I am.
Are you ready?
Play us out with some great song. What do you got for
us? Well, I have Brandi Carlile and Emmylou Harris, Take Me Home, Country Roads, an old John Denver song, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Have a great day, everyone.
Yeah, bye now.